Blog Talk Radio. Well, hello and welcome to today's episode of the A New Day Show. I am so excited about the story that we are about to hear tonight. I'm super excited because my guest tonight happens to be one of my regular listeners. I love when this happens. This gentleman has been listening to my show for a while. And then I got wind of his amazing story. And he has so graciously decided to come and share his story. The journey to hell, if you dare. You only live twice. And as you can hear from just those two statements, that we are up for a bumpy, however rewarding ride tonight. As always, I am your honored guest, Dynamic Daphne, and I am so pumped up tonight. As always, I love to give gratitude, and I want to give gratitude to the amazing set of surgeons, Dr. Penarelli and her amazing surgeons who performed my surgery this past Thursday. Yes, I am home recuperating and I'm popped up between pillows and everything to support my back and so I keep comfortable. So, you know, I am so thankful for the amazing internet where I don't have to be flat out on my back. I can be here listening to you, my listeners, and still so into and serve you. So to Dr. Penarelli, on her amazing team, I thank you and I thank God for using them to perform the surgery. I want to read to you from my book, Celebrating 365 Days of Gratitude. I will be reading throughout the show, but the one I want to read today is the contribution for October the 14th, and this is done by George L. Ecker. And it reads, every day, gratitude day. Thank you, God, for helping me wake up to enjoy another day. We should express our gratefulness to everyone we meet throughout the day, especially to those who are grumpy and self-centered, and to those who do not appreciate the freedom that our beloved country allows us to have. We should be very grateful that we can feel so safe here where we live, at our place of worship, our parks and our markets filled with endless choices of food. We should be thankful for the foods on our tables every day. We should be very grateful for the high level of intelligence and skills that we have acquired and put to good use in our daily activities. We should appreciate the friendships that we have acquired and the fun times that we are able to enjoy. We should appreciate the air we breathe and the rays of sunlight that clearly illuminate the sunsets and create colorful rainbows. We should be grateful for the love we share with our children, our neighbors, and our friends, as they all help create an environment of care, concern, and respect for life, eliminating hatred and revenge. That is so true. I welcome our guest FB3 to the chat. My honored guest also has been hanging in the virtual green room. We have one caller on the line. Praise to God 41. Whenever you want to speak, please just press the number 1 and I will know you have a question. And while I bring my honored guests on, I want to remind you that you are always welcome to be part of our conversation by calling 646-915-8166. 646-915-8166 is the number that you can call in and participate in the conversation. And the chat room is up and running as well. So without any further delay, I want to bring on one of my supporters of my radio show, who is also a radio host himself, and he has been an avid listener to my show, calls me in and encourage me to keep doing what God has called me to do. And this gentleman is none other than Mr. Gomisando Vido. Mr. Vido, how are you?
How are you doing, Doctor? Thank you for having me on the show. It is such an honor, I tell you, when I come to your show and listen. I remember the first time I listened in, and I said, wow, this lady is amazing. She just says the right thing. Everything that comes out of her mouth is the right thing. So I stood around and I kept listening and I just keep coming back. And, of course, I encourage you because I encourage people who have a good message out there. And
Thank you.
I mean, you speak about the Internet, how amazing it is, you know, that you can lay in bed. But you are amazing yourself because, the things you put out there, people are listening to it. And we got to thank God for that.
Thank you. You know, it's amazing because you sent me the book, your book, and I got the book yesterday, and I wrote on my Facebook page, I said, you know, oh, I wish I had took up speed reading, because here I am, have the book, the guest is on the show tomorrow, and I'm still under the influence of the anesthesia. I can hardly keep my eyes open, and one of my supporters and one of my alumni colleagues from Ashford University wrote on my page, you don't have to worry about that because you are a natural.
Yep, that's right.
And I am just thankful that, you know, God can use all of us, of us, to do his work. And, you know, we all have a story to tell. And people look around and they see us. They don't know our story. So, you know, I just applaud you for your willingness to come here and share your story. And I tell you, I've been thumbing through the book and I'm saying, oh my God, this is good stuff. This is good stuff. This is good stuff. And we are going to get to the book because I must tell the listeners, tonight's show, we are on for 2 full hours, so you don't have to worry about it getting off in an hour and a half. We are on for 2 full hours. So, Mr. Vidal,
yes.
Puerto Rican born, come to America at an early age with his parent, but you've been busy since age 7. I want you to just tell the people about the humble beginnings of this little Puerto Rican boy.
Well, yeah, I definitely will. But when my parents did come here from Puerto Rico, it was under the impression of the American dream,
mm-hmm.
Which was promised to us in Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Operation Bootstrap. And what it was trying to get Puerto Ricans from the mainland here
mm-hmm.
to work, and they promised them everything. And little did they know, they actually came here to work factories
mm-hmm.
or to be discriminated against and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So at a very early age, I began to see how the struggles that my father had to go through, how he was denied jobs,
mm-hmm.
how he was a victim of racism.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me very, very alert to my surroundings
mm-hmm.
at all times. I always saw that. But, that kind of turned me to a different ways. I have very good parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God took them both for me recently.
Mm-hmm.
But my dad did live to 101 years old.
God bless him. Yeah, I read that. Yes, God bless him. What a blessing. What a blessing. You know, when I came here from Jamaica, because I'm from Jamaica, West Indies, and when I started visiting Harlem, up until now, because my stylist lives in Harlem and I go there occasionally, and I always hear people make reference of Spanish Harlem. And it
mm-hmm.
wasn't until I read it in your book I know why.
Yeah.
It's called the Spanish Harlem. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's when we first, it was like a bridge from Puerto Rico to Spanish Harlem,
mm-hmm.
you know, an invisible bridge, because that's where everybody landed up at. Every Puerto Rican landed up in Spanish
mm-hmm.
Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the first, of course, you know, whites were there, the Italians, the Jews. When
mm-hmm.
we came in, they moved out, and,
mm-hmm.
and you get the same thing you get in every community where you
mm-hmm.
have poverty. You know,
mm-hmm.
you get the drugs, you get the gangs and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I, at a very young age, I began to see that, you know,
mm-hmm.
the gangs, the drug scenes and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I fell victim to it. You know, at
mm-hmm.
7 years old, one way to protect myself from other gangs and other neighborhoods was to be involved with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I was robbed at knife point
mm-hmm.
While I was shining shoes one day.
Mm-hmm.
And that I decided to join the gang,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
that was the complete change in my life. I mean, from
mm-hmm.
there on, everything went downhill
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
I was introduced to alcohol
mm-hmm.
at the age of 8. I was already an alcoholic.
Before you go there, though, I want to go back because you went ahead of me, because we have grown people now who are out of their jobs, and they are blaming the government why they're not eating bread and why they're not this and why they are not that. However, you, back in those days, you were 7 years old when you started your first business.
Mm-hmm.
And
you got
a loan. How much did you get a loan from? You got a big loan from a bank to start your business, right?
No, not really. What I got was my father, who made a shoe shine box for me
mm-hmm.
With his hands, because my father was great with his hands. He could make
mm-hmm.
anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he got some wood together, made me a shoe shine box.
Mm-hmm.
He gave me the first $10 or $7, whatever it took, to
mm-hmm.
fill up my box, which was a rags,
mm-hmm.
a brush, liquid, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And from there on, my average day was like $7-$8 a day.
And
that's what I made.
That for a 7-year-old was a lot of money.
That was a lot of money.
Because
that was a lot of money.
Your father working in the factory, what was he grossing every week?
He was grossing about $120 a week.
And you were just going out to the corner. What is it? 103rd Street.
103rd Street.
You were going out on the corner after school to stand the shoes, or you weren't going to school? You were quitting school?
Well, at first I was going to school. Right after school, I used to keep my shoebox at his grocery store.
Right.
And they knew me very well there, and everybody in the neighborhood actually knew me. It was a good little kid that just stood in the corner and shined shoes and mind his own business. But that made me a very observant guy because I saw people walking. When it was slow, I used to sit in the chair and watch people's reaction, how people walk, how people talk, the difference in people, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. And after a while, when I got a little busier, I started cutting classes from school, and that's when things, began to get ugly.
Yeah, so I want you to pick up. When I come back, I'm going to check this person on the phone line to see if they have a question.
Sure.
I want you to pick up when I come back about where you were robbed at Knife Point. I want to welcome guest 4778 to the chat. If you have any question, feel free to call in at 646-915, or if you type it in the chat room, I will just read it. I'm going to go to my caller, Praise to God 41, on the line. Hello, Praise to God 41. Thanks for joining the show. Where are you joining us from tonight?
Well, she's talking to me, and I'm doing something.
Hello?
What's the message going? Is this guy right here? Okay.
Do you have a question, or are you just joining us to listen? Hello, caller.
Hey.
Praise to God 41. Do you have a question, or are you just listening? Okay, well, I will come back to you. Continue listening.
Okay.
All right.
Are you ready for the telephone number?
Okay.
Can you call that?
Okay, let me go back. I wasn't sure she was talking to me. Praise to God 41, are you listening, or you have a question? Okay, we will come back. Maybe she's multitasking. Gumasundu.
Yes, ma'am.
Let's pick up where you were robbed at Knife Point.
Yeah, like I said, I was a regular at 103rd Street, and I was very well known. And sometimes you get kids from other neighborhoods who come by and bully on smaller kids or rob or store, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And this was why there was need at that time for gangs. You know, they weren't like the gangs of today.
Mm-hmm.
So I had finished my work and had packing up my shoebox and grabbed my chair. Had a wooden chair and a wooden shoebox that I easily carried.
Yeah.
And as I began to walk, this kid, much taller than I am, double my size and definitely double my age, approached me and told me that someone was out to steal my money.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted me to give it to him so no harm will come to me.
Mm-hmm.
And right away, I was pretty street smart already, so I knew what his intention was.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, no, I'll hold on to the money.
Yeah.
But he insisted, he put his hand on my shoulder and says, come on. And he took me into this building right across the street.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he pulled out a very, very long knife.
My
and he told me, listen, if you don't give me that money, I'm going to have to take it from you.
Mm.
So, I mean, the first time that I ever had a knife pointed to me in my face, and I was pretty scared. So,
wow.
I gave him the money, and he ran out.
Mm.
And I went home, I was crying, I was angry. I mean, there was a lot of different feelings because I never did anything like that to anyone. I
right.
never seen anyone do that to me.
Mm.
I mean, so it was something new to me, and I said, wow, this is real. There are bad people out here.
My God.
So I didn't tell no one about it because I was scared that people will, you know, will will
come
create
back.
Something out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I cried about it and whatnot. But normally, what I used to do with the money that I used to make is I used to buy
mm-hmm.
candy and
mm-hmm.
stuff for my brothers and sisters, and we used to share.
Oh, okay.
So that particular day, I was unable to do that, so I had
but
to come up with some excuse.
Yes. All right, we have quite a few callers on, Mr. Vidu. I want to ask you to hold. We want to include them in this conversation. I am going to go to your line, and if you do not want to, if you do not have a question, excuse me, you can just let me know that. I am going to go back to Praise to God 41. Hello and welcome to the New Day Show. Where are you joining us from tonight, Praise to God 41? Praise to God 41, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, now I can hear you. Welcome to the show. Where are you joining us from tonight?
I'm from Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Bowling Green, Kentucky, welcome. Is this this is your first time to the show, and I thank you for coming. I hope this will not be the last time. Do you have a question for my honored guest?
Well, this is Ebony Network Connection, and you have invited me.
Okay.
I was kind of in the middle of the show because I have another co-founder that's with Ebony Network Connection was joining me, and I had to help her get connected, so I missed the first part of the show.
All right. So you're listening. I leave you listening, and I will check in with the other two people on. And if you have any questions, feel welcome to press the number 1, and I will open back your line, okay?
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining. All right, I am going to go to caller. Your last 4 digits are 6732. Welcome to the New Day Show, and do you have a question for us? Where are you joining us from? Hello, caller. Your last 4 digits are 6732.
It's me, right, Nita?
Your second 3 digits are 304.
Yes, ma'am. How are you?
I am blessed. And how are you? Thank you for joining us. Do you have a question for us?
Oh, no question at this time, ma'am. I'm just checking in.
All right. Where are you joining us from?
I'm joining from Elizabethtown, Kentucky. I am a co-founder of Ebony Network Connection.
All right now. All right. Ebony Connection in the house. All right. Well, I will look forward to you guys participating in the conversation. We love participation.
Yes,
all
ma'am.
Right.
Thank you very much. God bless.
God bless you too. And I'm going to go to the next caller. The next caller, your last 4 digits are 8663. Would you tell us your name and where you're joining us from, please? Hello? Well, I guess because the first 3 digits are 270, I guess it's from Kentucky as well, and I will open back the line. And guest FB3 and guest 4778, you are welcome to chime in with your question. So let me know what your questions are, and I'll go back to my honored guest. The number you can call is 646-915-8166. So here we are. You're earning for that day, which was over $8, which was a lot of money for a 7-year-old boy. Went, like they say, butter against sun. You
mm-hmm.
went home penniless, nothing for your siblings. Yet the next day you went back out, business as usual. And I remember you writing that you missed the money, but you were glad that he did not take your shoebox.
That's right. That was my moneymaker. The shoebox was my moneymaker. So as long as he didn't touch that, I knew that there was hope.
There was hope.
There
was hope.
I went the next day, and I continued to 103rd Street, and people had asked me what had happened, and I had told them. So people were very concerned for me. Bodegas in the corners used to pop out their heads to make sure I was okay, you know, and stuff like that. And they always looked out for me. People looked out for me, you know, because they knew that I was not a troublemaker. I was one of those working kids that, you know, spend my money sometimes with them.
Right.
So, you know, it was business as usual. I mean, I was scared, though, you know, that this may happen again. I was I was fearful. And I really wanted to somehow get my money back or this guy pay somehow, you know, or explain to me why or something. You know, why would a bigger kid done this? And I finally had that opportunity to do that.
Yes. When did this happen? And how? How did his payback come about?
Well, what had happened was I had met some people, kids there that used to run that block. And they were the Junior Dragons. It was a gang. And the Junior Dragons was like the smaller kids to the Dragons. The Dragons were the big tough bank robbers and really hardcore gangsters. And then if you were too young, you couldn't join them, so you became a Junior Dragon with their blessing.
Wow.
So it was like a preschool gangster thing. And I had met up with these guys. They took a liking to me, and they protected me. And they told me, like, if they ever have any type of problems, you know, like that or anything, so let me know. And I told them that I did have a problem. And I explained to them what had happened. They said, well, if you ever see that guy again, you know, you let us know. And sure enough, one day we saw that guy again, and I pointed out to the Dragons. And they gave him a justice that I'd never witnessed in my life. I mean, it was unbelievable. And they beat him severely. They threw him down the subway steps. I mean, I was screaming, stop. You know, it was something that I couldn't bear. And they hit him. I mean, the guy was bloody all over, but they were hitting him with brass knuckles, punches, whatever thing. And it was because, not just because they robbed me, but because he had the audacity to come into that particular neighborhood to do that. And also to be a sort of respect. You know, you don't go to someone else's neighborhood to do something like that. So I pretty much felt bad for the guy afterwards, but he never showed his face again.
Yeah, and that by this time, how old were you?
I was about eight
years old.
Yeah, I was about eight by now. Yeah, seven is going on eight, and I was really asked if I wanted to join, and I kind of liked it. I said, "Well, listen, with them, I'll be protected. I'll be part of them. This'll be great." I joined him, and in order for me to join him, I had to fight one of the guys, and the guys I had in a fight was the warlord, and he was the one who decided.
He was the head guy, right?
Well, the president, you had the president, and you had the warlord. The warlord was the guy who made the decisions when they were fighting with other gangs. He was a bigger kid. They all were bigger than me, but I was pretty good. I was pretty fast. I was a natural, and I beat him. And by beating him, I became the youngest warlord of the Dragons ever. And I started making decisions now who we fight and who we not. So that went to my head a little bit. But, you know, that revenge was not really in my mind. But I knew now that I had some power and that I know I felt safe, not just with myself, but now that I have a group. And I belong to something.
So now, when you became part of the Junior Dragons, you weren't going to the Catholic school yet, were you?
Yeah, I was going to Catholic school.
I
was. Yeah.
You were going to Catholic school in the daytime, and you were gang banging in the evening. How were you working this?
Well, that's exactly how I did. Right after school, I used to go and meet up with them, and at times that's when I started to play hooky from school, and sometimes I'd even show up to school and just hang out with my friends. So that, that's when the school decided that, you know, that they don't want me there anymore, you know, because I had a, I mean, I missed a lot in school. I started being disruptive in school, which I wasn't. I was an A student. I was an A student all the way through, but
even
you know,
when
after,
even when you were gangbanging, you were a student?
Yeah, no, after that, you know, the grades started to mess up a little
slide.
Bit.
They
started to mess up a lot.
But you wrote in your book that even during the time when you were in Catholic school, you had your doubts because the teaching that you were getting at home, it was kind of different at the Catholic school. Were your parents Catholic or they were practicing another religion?
No, my parents were Christians, I guess Catholic, because they did attend Catholic church.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because probably because they put us in Catholic school. But my father always was a Christian, and my mom has always been a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't very religious people that went to church on Sundays every Sunday. They occasionally did, but they did respect the Word of God, and they always, always imposed the Word of God on me.
And they were teaching you something because you came to a decision that what you were hearing at school wasn't lining up with what you were hearing at home. And you questioned that.
Right. Well, not just at what I was listening at home, but what I was hearing everywhere. I mean, when, in Catholic Church, I've always had this love for God. I always did. Because of the teachings that my parents gave me and my other parents and my other family members. And they always, you know, most of my family are very religious or Christian. And the things that I've learned from them, I wanted to know more. And I figured the people who have the authority to answer these questions would be the Catholic Church. So going to a Catholic priest and asking them these questions when they had no answers for me kind of confused me a lot, you know.
Right.
They either just brush you off or they tell you, you know, you're too young to know or, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I began to see that the only interest was the envelopes that my parents used to give in because that's the only thing I was ever questioned for. Do you have your envelope with the money in it?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I started seeing the selfishness in the church.
Wow. So here you are going to Catholic school. The only thing I haven't heard yet that is traditional is that you were an altar boy, and I haven't read that anywhere yet.
Yeah.
But there you are in Catholic school, going to Catholic school, at not a regular public school. You are going to a Christian Catholic school, yet you're gang-banging. You're being a little miniature entrepreneur with your shoe sign business to earn money. When did everything else? When did the journey start heading deeper down to hell, as you term it?
Well, first of all, the altar boy came later on, and it wasn't with the Catholic Church. It was when I was placed at a Catholic institution.
Uh-huh.
When I became an altar boy. Well, I started to drink alcohol.
Yes.
At what age? 7-8 years old, by 8 years old, I was an alcoholic. I used to get chills and stuff that I didn't have a drink. So that's how much I used to drink.
Wow.
And it was that cheap wine we used to buy. And, of course, when we were kids, we couldn't go into the liquor store. So the homeless people that were around, we used to give them 25 cents. So they can buy a bottle, and 25 cents to buy us a bottle. That's how cheap that wine was, 25 cents a pint.
My God.
Gypsy Rose or Thunderbird. It was the cheapest stuff that, I mean, it's poison. And that's what I was drinking. And by drinking all this stuff, you know, after that, you know, came marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I was smoking a pot at the age of 8 years old.
My
so
God.
Doing that and drinking and pretty much being drunk all day.
And
all
if you don't mind me asking you, how old you are now?
I'm still about 8 years old.
You're how
8
much?
8 years old. How I am now?
Now, today.
Today I'm 60 years old.
Today you are 60 years old, so
yes.
Indeed you have lived twice. God
I
has
have
given
twice.
You a second life. So now
oh,
I
yes.
understand fully how the book came, the title of the book, You Only Live Twice, came about. If you have just joined us, I am on with my honored guest, Gumasundo Vadu, and he is the author of the book, You Only Live Twice. He has an amazing story that he shares with us, and he gave it a tagline, The Journey to Hell and Back. And this gentleman has now committed his life into saving inner city kids from the street because he does not want them to travel the same journey that he has traveled. So he is investing his time in these children. So you were drinking alcohol. You know, they say that there's always a way to get what you want. Because
mm-hmm.
here you all, at that tender age of 8, you all were kind of smart enough to know that if you all give the whiners 25 cents to buy theirs, they will buy yours and give it to you too. And they're not even looking to say, they are kids and we shouldn't do this. So,
exactly.
But all that happened on that journey. However, your life turned around and you did some amazing things. You held responsible roles in society. How did
yes.
this turnaround came?
Well, it was a long time before the turnaround came because when my mother and father began to see the change in me, the hooky playing from school, my lack of respect, my out of control, my
mm-hmm.
sneaking out of the house, my wine breath, you know, they had to do something. So they kept
mm-hmm.
threatening me with putting me inside a home.
Mm-hmm.
So that only kind of made me more rebel.
Defiant.
Yeah, more defiant and hang out with these guys even more. So
mm-hmm.
finally my parents had no choice, and they thought that by moving from Harlem, from Spanish Harlem to the South Bronx, this
Boogie
would change.
Boogie down Bronx.
So we moved from the Spanish Harlem to South Bronx, which was
mm-hmm.
no difference except the street signs.
Wow.
For the street signs.
Wow.
And so there's when I really got my education on hardcore drugs.
Mm-hmm.
I began to see... Well, I saw racism at my early age. Back when I was in Spanish Harlem,
mm-hmm.
I had moved from 103rd Street to 86th Street.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I did that, because there was a lot of white folk out there, a lot of white folk who figured they were the ones that had the money. You know, we just come
mm-hmm.
to rich people. Because we thought every white folk was rich. So I started to go over there and in front of a cigar store and shine some shoes.
Because they were spending money for the shoe shine.
They weren't spending no money. They were cheap.
Oh,
they were cheap. I was hoping that was what would happen.
Yeah.
But I'm standing in front of a cigar store there, and the owner comes out and asks me to get out of there.
Wow.
And he said I shouldn't be here. That I'm not from the neighborhood.
Oh,
so I couldn't understand why he would ask me to do anything like that. I said, well, I'm not doing nothing wrong. I'm staying right here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So he comes out again. He comes out real mad and starts calling me all kinds of racial slurs, spake and whatnot. And he grabs my shoebox and my chair and he throws it up in the air and
wow.
bangs to the ground, breaks it up in little pieces.
Oh, God.
And that broke my heart because I mean, that was the box that my dad made.
Yeah.
And that's my business. And then there were some other kids there, some white kids looking at this, and you know, you think they will come to help or anything, but they laughed at me.
Wow.
And I could not understand why these people were laughing at me.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy just said, well, go back mm-hmm. to your own place, you know, where you come from, not from here, you know, spit
that
and this
means
and that.
You need to go back to the Spanish section. That's what he's
exactly.
talking about.
Exactly.
My God.
And that's
My
when I
God.
Began to realize how racism, you know. So I got
yes.
my first stage of racism
yes.
at the age of 8 years old. And
my
then
God.
Later in life, I began to open my eyes to it. And I,
mm-hmm.
you know, I've seen it a lot and became a victim of it many times. So in the Bronx, you know, things didn't change much, mm-hmm. except that it just got worse. Because
wow.
I graduated from from just drinking, which I never left. I kept on drinking and drinking, mm-hmm. to pot, pill popping, and then mm-hmm. shooting heroin
my
right
God.
Up my vein.
My
so
God.
At 13 years old, I was shooting drugs on my mm-hmm. vein. And I probably wow. was one of the younger guys to do that. And most of the kids who try that, usually they would try it by skin popping, by putting it on their, you know, arm, not mm-hmm. their vein, just on their mm-hmm. arm, the skin. Mm-hmm. But I didn't. I started mainlining. I went right up my vein with it. That's called mainlining. And I really enjoyed
wow.
the high so much that I just got hooked on that. And that's when my life began to really, really go downhill.
Mm. And now you're how old, you said?
I'm 60 years old.
No. And when you started popping
and
heroin?
Now, well, I thought I was 13 years old.
And where?
I was
32.
13.
13.
13
oh, my
years
heaven.
Old.
Where were you getting the money to support that habit?
Well, we sold bottles, we sold cans, we used to steal the copper from the buildings, you know, and stuff like that, you know, from condemned buildings, and you always hustle in the supermarket, whatever you find any means.
And now you were completely out of school. You weren't going to school at all.
No, I dropped out of school.
Wow.
I dropped out of school.
Wow.
And because of that, my parents knew they had to do something
mm-hmm.
about that situation.
Yeah.
And I was sent to the courts, to the court
mm-hmm.
system.
Yes.
And my parents had no control over me. They really did not. So they took me the courts and they sent me to Children's Village in Dobbs Ferry, New York,
mm-hmm.
which was a Christian center also. For troubled kids,
mm-hmm.
and that's where I went, and that's where I became an altar boy there.
Wow!
So I got pretty a little bit involved in their ways, but it didn't really cure me of anything. You know, it just what it did is kind of opened my eyes and let me know what I was doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because as soon as I came out of Children's Village,
mm-hmm.
I went right back to the same thing.
Wow, how long were you there for?
2 years.
Wow, and you went back. You never used why you were there, and you came
no.
back and went back to the same lifestyle.
Went back to the same lifestyle.
Although you were there for 2 years, they never show you any means of sustainability. So you had to go back to what you knew.
Well, they kind of... did whatever they could do to try to teach you. There was school there. There was counselors. There was a psychiatrist. There were all
mm-hmm.
kinds of people there that were there to help you.
Mm-hmm.
But I was the guy who held back my feelings, and I always did.
Mm-hmm.
So they really didn't know who I was. I always kept myself to myself.
Right. You,
so,
weren't, you weren't participating.
Exactly. So if they knew who I really was, then maybe can get into me more. But I never allowed myself to to that happen. So when I went back out, I went more hardcore into the heroin. I started hanging out in the streets, same thing. And
mm-hmm.
I joined a gang there, and the Fox Street Gang, which was much tougher than the ones in Spanish Harlem,
mm-hmm.
because there we had our weapons, there we had... We didn't have any colors. What we had was handkerchiefs that
wow.
we put in our pockets, and that's how identify us. And what we did, we protected the neighborhood from anything that happened. And the storekeepers and whatever, and they used to pay us for doing this to us. So some storekeeper had a problem. You know, we did what we had to do. Some girl had a problem. We go to the guy's neighborhood, whoever heard her, and we do whatever we had to do. You know, so,
and that money that you were all collecting from the shopkeepers, you were using it to do your drugs.
That's correct.
And were you hanging out now 24/7 on the streets, or you were going back home to your parents' house?
No, I went to my parents' home. I went
mm-hmm.
to my parents' home when I was tired and for a bed. You know, it was mostly used for a bed. You know, to rest. And then come back out the next day and do the same thing. You know.
My God.
So.
And were you the only boy in your family?
No, no. There was two more. I had an older brother and a younger brother, and none of them used.
My God.
None of them used drugs. They all went through school. They all were. They all followed the right way.
Mm.
Yeah.
My God. In this world, we all have our own trials and tribulations and our own journey to follow and mm-hmm. our own journey to travel. But, you know, I am so proud that you are still around to share your story that others can listen to it and said, I don't have to go down that path.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't have to do that. Go ahead. You were saying something.
Well, that's a message I give to the teens today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I speak to the teens, I speak with them. I don't speak at them. And that's a problem that a lot of people have. They speak to them, and they should speak with them and listen
right.
to what these kids know. And
you
get to know them personally when you have a little humor with them. When
mm-hmm.
they know that you've been through that road, they're going to respect
mm-hmm.
you more.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I guide them pretty much, and I have a very good success rate with
mm-hmm.
them. You know, they're mostly Black and Latino kids because those are the primary ones that fall victim to this.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can identify with me. And
let us talk about how you began that work. What made you come to the decision? But before we do that, though, I want you to share that you did not stay on the streets for your entire life. You went you went in some valleys, you rode back, you rose to the mountain top, and you did some
mm-hmm.
great things. So talk about those things, and then I would like for you to go into why you are now doing the work that you're doing.
Mm-hmm. I've always believed in God, and I've always believed that there was a spiritual force with me at all times.
Mm-hmm.
But I always wondered why that spiritual force was not helping me.
Mm-hmm.
But it kept giving me messages, and it kept giving me trials and placing me in certain areas and places, or placing people in my life for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew somehow there was some kind of mission for me. I really felt this.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew this when I saved a man from falling in a train track one time.
Yes.
We used to get into the train, the subways in New York, by going into the middle of it. We could
mm-hmm.
take the chains, pick it up, and jump in between the cars. And that's how we used to ride the trains.
Wow.
That's how we used to ride the trains, you know. And there was this one guy who tried that after I did, and he fell down, and the train started to move. Instantly, I stuck my hand out, and I pulled him right in. Where I got the strength, I don't know. And it only was 1 second, and he would have been dead.
My God.
I knew that was the power of God there.
Mm.
And I walked out. I got no applause. I got nothing. Nobody knew who I was. The next stop was mine. But it did teach me something. It says, wow, I saved this guy's life. And look at me. I can't save my own. I'm over here on drugs. I'm this.
Wow.
I think I was a top maintenance for God. And he had it to teach me in a certain way. And this was just one of the many incidents that really opened my eyes to
mm-hmm.
know that God was there for me no matter what.
Yes.
And then not to give up. But I was like fighting that force because
mm-hmm.
I kept going back to the same negativity and negativity
mm-hmm.
and refused to accept the positive things that people said. But I knew what was right and wrong, and I was still doing wrong.
But
no.
even in those times when you were thinking that God wasn't there, he was there for you all the time, because all those risky behaviors that you participated in, if it was not for him, you would not be hearing this conversation with me tonight. So although you're thinking he wasn't there, yes, he was there for you all the time. All the time.
Well, yes, I later realized that. I later realized that if it wasn't for God, I would have been dead a long, long time ago. I mean, I had guns pointed to my face.
My
I had people, 10, 15 people chasing me, and I've outran them. You know, so I used to jump from roof to roof just to show that I could do it. And this was like a dare that we used to have in the neighborhood. And guys used to fall. And I used to always make
but
it.
But
you know?
Even those times you realize it was the Spirit of God that you got that superpower to be jumping from roof to roof. Because you couldn't do it by yourself.
Oh, no.
My God.
Oh, no. Oh,
just
no.
Listening, so, it gives me the chills, you know? Wow.
Yeah, he was always there for me, and I knew it, but I did not want to accept it fully because I was mm-hmm. having too much fun or
yeah.
I was enjoying myself and what I was
mm-hmm.
doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't want to be honest with myself by accepting it and say, listen, turn your whole will to God. And
mm-hmm.
I didn't do that till later in life.
Wow.
And when I turned my whole will to God, was when I really got the message of what is my purpose and what is my mission in life.
So
and with all that I've learned now, this is what I should be doing with it.
When you got, what was happening when you got that aha moment and say, oh man, oh, I got to give up. It's not all about me. I got to give. I have to surrender. What happened when you got that aha moment? Can you recall?
Oh, yeah. There were many moments prior to that that I used to say, oh, this is enough. This is crazy. I'm never going to do this again. But I kept repeating it.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't to one time when I was home, and I already have kids now. My wife and kids were upstairs. I sent them all upstairs where I had friends. Now, I had stopped the drugging and everything, but I was still doing a lot of drugging and some cocaine, sniffing cocaine, instead of shooting up heroin. And I had sent them all upstairs to the room, and I had a bunch of friends there, police officers and some sheriffs, and we're watching a fight. On TV, and actually it was the actual replay of the fight, because we already saw the fight, and we put the tape on that record and watched it again. And I found this so ridiculous. I said, my God, I told my wife and children that they cannot come downstairs. Meantime, I have all these people here making a mess, drinking. How selfish am I?
Mm.
I said, my God, you got to leave, man. So what happened? You got to leave. I threw them all out.
Mm.
I went upstairs to my room. I went upstairs crying. I just went upstairs crying. My wife said, what happened? I said, nothing. I locked myself in my room. I got on my knees.
Mm.
I swear to you, doctor, I got on my knees, and I looked up to the sky, and I prayed to God.
Mm.
I still remember that feeling and that light that I saw. I said, God, please relieve me from this obsession of drinking and drugging.
I want
to be a good man, a good father, a good worker, a good everything.
Wow.
And that light just got brighter and brighter, and I just felt something overcome me. And from that day on, I did not touch alcohol or drug again.
My God.
So it was no program, no detox program in the world could have saved me.
Wow.
Nothing.
Wow.
No AA programs, nothing.
Mm.
It was me getting on my knees.
Yes,
and
surrendering
to God. Surrender completely to God.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a story. I want to welcome guest 5310-4778-5460 to the show. Please be part of the conversation by dialing 1-646-915-8166 if you have your questions or if you want to give any feedback. Call in. We would love to hear from you. Wow. It gave me the chills just listening to you. And I want to make it clear. It's not that you're bashing the AA program or any of the other programs that they have in place. But until you are completely ready, it doesn't matter how much money you spend, and it doesn't matter which institution you go to, nothing is going to happen until you completely surrender to the Almighty. And I want to thank you for that. So that happened, and you got your breakthrough, and what happened next?
Well, yeah, the program, Alcoholic Anonymous, I actually, after this feeling, I decided to attend meetings just to make sure that I stay in that. So
right.
I kept reading and learning much about alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
But there was God that saved me. I mean, you know,
yes.
But I would never bash AA. These programs have saved a lot of people.
That's
I
right.
I would recommend people to that. I mean, I've tried it. For some
well,
people, it works. For some people, it don't.
Yes. Yes.
I was high maintenance. I was the type of guy who did not listen to authority, did not listen to nothing. Only God was the only one that could tell me what to do, and that's the way I felt. You know, I walked around with that chip on my shoulder, and I realized God was much bigger than me that day.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wow. You know, I commend you for your obedience in surrendering. And knowing that what you were doing was not only destroying you, but it was destroying your family and
that's
your
right.
community. And you
that's
decided
right.
to take responsibility to stop. The buck stopped with you and you stop it there. And
that's
I
right.
pray that somebody is listening who knows that the buck needs to stop right there with them. And that they need to stop and stop destroying who they are and their families. All right,
that's true.
Remember, you can call 646-915-8166. Go ahead.
And you said that right, responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to take a responsibility for our own actions.
That's right.
You know,
right.
I used to blame this and blame that and blame that and the government and this and that. Well, yeah, mm-hmm. they may have something to do with the drug flow in the communities and this and that, but that does not give you an excuse or a free pass to destroy
mm-hmm.
your life.
That's right.
So when you start
that's
taking
right.
your own responsibility and says, no, I messed up.
Mm-hmm.
It was me who did put that needle in my arm. And it's
that's
me
right.
that has to stop this.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you saw that light. It's like, you know, it brought me back to the show last week on the book with Lonnie Webb, Walking Toward the Light. And you just mentioned
mm-hmm.
now that you prayed and you saw that light coming. And since you saw that light, it has not been darkness for you again.
I see that light up so often now.
Yes.
When I pray, I look for that light.
Mm.
And that's when I know I'm in true alliance with God. And
mm-hmm.
I always look for that light. Sometimes I roll my eyes back when I pray. And I speak to Jesus and I see the light. And it feels so good. So I look forward to the light, and we all have that light. And
yes,
I discovered that
yes.
I had a light in me
mm-hmm.
years ago when I used to write, I used to recite poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And I lay down on my bed, and I started saying, what am I going to do with my life? I am destroying my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to close my eyes, and
mm-hmm.
there was like a little spark of light within me that
mm-hmm.
it kept telling me there is still hope. I mean, I
my
thought of
God.
Suicide. I thought
yes.
of actually killing myself. I did not want to live. I did not care about nothing or nobody anymore. But then when I saw that light, I began to focus on it, and I made that light become bigger and bigger as I did good deeds. So every time I did a good deed, that light got bigger. So I kept doing more good deeds, and I said, this is what life is about.
That's your
doing
healing.
Doing for others.
Healing.
Doing for
others. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
And that light has led you to your commitment to inner city kids.
That's correct.
So let's talk about the work you're doing with these young people.
Well, I had decided from some time back. I've always talked to kids in the neighborhoods after I got clean. Always. Every time I see a kid, I would always pull them over and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was told that by a police officer that he had a program that it's good for me to attend and maybe talk to the kids there because I was a tickler in that, and these kids will listen to somebody who's been there.
Mm-hmm.
So I started with the PAL. I went to the PAL, Police Athletic League, and I spoke to some of the kids, and I saw how attentive they were and how they were listening, and I just kept on. Then I was invited into the schools, middle schools and high schools, by principals to speak to the kids. So I started speaking to them, and when I spoke to them, I started to see myself in each one of these kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I saw the one that didn't want to listen. I saw the one that kept straight looking at me. The one that raised his hand and asked a question.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw myself in each one of them, and I said, God, I got to give my all here because mm-hmm. if I can save just one of these kids, mm-hmm. then, you know, it's great. So mm-hmm. I kept being invited back into schools and whatnot. And I said, well, mm-hmm. I want to take this a little further.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did is I contacted the Good Shepherd program,
mm-hmm.
Youth Shepherd, and it's a mediation group for kids who had some trouble with the law, but nothing severe, you know, no violent.
Mm-hmm.
But they were in the wrong way. They were in mm-hmm. the wrong route, going the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
And what they needed only is someone to have the patience to talk to them and let them know that if they continue this way, where they will land up. And I was the perfect guy to tell them
mm-hmm.
because I was there and I told them exactly. And I started, and then when I finished, when I joined, almost when I'm finished talking to these kids, I showed them my arms.
Yes.
And they started
yes.
looking at it, and they said, wow, I have self-inflicted scars, but
oh
I have
God.
Razor blade. I used to cut myself.
Mm.
That's how much I hated myself. I used to slice myself and watch my blood pour down and just watch it pour down. And each drop that fell down, I thought pain was actually coming out of my body, but it wasn't.
Jesus. Wow. Wow.
So when
I used to hide them. I listened
but
to
I don't
your
hide them.
Story. I listened to your story, and I know that a lot of the drug education start in middle school, but I listened to you talk about when you were 7 and 8 years old and the things you were doing, and I think that the education need to start from there, from that age.
That's right.
Because you never know. You never
That's right.
know. And with all those cutting and slicing and bleeding, God still spare you.
That's right.
Because he said, you did not give yourself life. I gave life to you. You don't have the power to take your life. I created you for greatness. You can't see it, but I know why I created you. And that's why he has saved you for now, to help
that's
his children. Oh, my God.
I am grateful. I am grateful, Doctor, for what I went through in my life.
Oh,
I am
yes.
grateful.
Yes, yes.
I can look back in my past right now, and I don't feel guilt.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel shame.
No.
I don't feel hurt. I look back in my past, and I say, wisdom.
Wisdom.
Something that I have that I can share
right.
with others so they won't have
help
to go
to
the same thing.
That's right.
So that's the way I look at it, you know.
Wow.
But, you know, the past is like, you know, you got to leave it behind you. You can't
that's
live your
right.
past.
Oh,
you
no.
live your
that's,
future.
It's in the archive. It's
exactly.
in the archive, and you have to utilize your present. Because
that's
you know
right.
something? All we have is the present.
That's
because
right.
The next 24 hours, it's not going to be tomorrow. It's the present. So if we embrace and love and live the present to the fullest, we will not have any regret. Any regret. At what stage, how many years ago did you start this work with the young people?
Well, I've been working with them for the past 10, maybe 10, 12 years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I've been with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever I'm called, I go.
Mm-hmm.
Rehab. I don't charge for that. A lot of people had offered, and I said, listen, I don't charge. And there's a lot of people that do mentor kids, and they put websites and what, and they charge fees, thousands of dollars, but I don't. Because I feel I owe something to these kids, and I owe something to God. For
wow.
the second chance that he gave me.
Well, it's your ministry. It's your ministry. It's your ministry.
Exactly.
Wow. Right
exactly.
now. And with all that's happening and you're traveling around and helping these young people, you're not a well person by man's standard, right?
No, I'm not. According to the doctors on earth, I am terminally ill, and I was
mm-hmm.
supposed to have been dead a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
the greatest doctor of them all,
mm-hmm.
Has kept me around, and so I'm still here. And as long as I can walk, as long as I can think, and as long as I can breathe, I'm going to continue my work.
And he's been keeping you for a long time, so we know we love doctors and respect them, and we know that they can give a diagnosis, but they don't have the last word. And
that's correct.
With that being said, I want to read just one more celebrating gratitude, and then I want you to take a sip of water, and then I'm going to come back to you for the continuation. This
sure.
one is entitled, The Gratitude and Joy of Being a Mother, a Woman, a Friend. And this is by Barbara Soliman. Through time and space, a feminine entity prepares to sustain the winds of storms and the whisper soft coo of her newborn child. She who will give life represents a huge step in our earthly evolution. She can bend like bamboo to lovingly help her adored one take the first step. She is given a strong voice to fight and die if needed for her children. Yet, her whisper is the softest and loveliest sound. Her song mesmerizes all. She works incessantly in her never-ending role of sustaining and guiding, bringing faith, hope, and joy to all. She, regardless of size and weight, can perform great miracles for the sake of her children, for her parents, husband, friends, and even total stranger. A woman has so many huge roles, but none more special and closest to the divine than that of being a mother. So rejoice, my dearest ladies, because you do carry both the weight of the universe and the greatest of honors, that of being chosen to give life. May your days be filled with joy, the thrill of being truly loved, and the happiness of sharing that wonderful mystery of the divine in you. Yes, that was a contribution. I want to welcome guest 599 to the show. I'm hearing some disturbance. Thank you, Gamasunda. I want to encourage all the guests in the chat room to ask a question, make some remarks and feedback. Guest 5-944-546-0-477-853-10. And if you rather to call in, the number to call is 646-915-8166. So back to my honored guest. Mr. Vidoyo, dear, you have a lot of noise in your background. I don't know what you're doing back there.
I have noise in my background?
Yeah, I'm hearing it. No, I don't hear it, but I was hearing it before. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So, all right. So let's, yeah, it's good now. It's good and nice now. Let us continue with the conversation. We're talking about you being terminally ill, and the doctor says you should have died a year and a half ago, but Dr. Jesus says otherwise.
That's correct. I got a second opinion. The second opinion was from God.
That's right.
And he assured me that things are fine. So although I do have the symptoms and the effects that, you know, they're not as severe as they should be with someone with this condition. So
right.
I'm still able to walk. You know, I'm still able to do my daily tasks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I give thanks every day.
And
every
you keep
day.
Working for him. You keep working for him.
Oh, yes. Oh,
and
yes. And I pretty much accepted the fact that, you know, if it comes, it comes. I think that now I have done my part in giving back to what was given to me.
And the legacy.
I will continue to do that. And by doing so, I feel that closeness with God. So I know that when I do leave, I'll be with him. But
and
I really do not
God
have that
been
fear
left
for
undone.
That
day. Yes, yes. So this brings us up now to the book you have written, You Only Live Twice. Now, let's talk about the title. How did you choose this title? Let's talk about that, because that's a deep title.
Well, I saw it this way. It was two complete different lives. One life, I lived in agony, in pain, in jealousy, in hate, you mean all the negatives I've lifted.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was able to change that into complete positive.
Mm-hmm.
And I died because at one point I did not care about nothing.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that did not die was my heart did not stop.
Mm-hmm.
But my mind did not care. I didn't care about no one or no or myself. And when you don't love yourself, you can't love no one.
Mm.
So I wasn't at a stage that, you know, whatever happens, happens.
Mm.
And I physically felt I was dead. I was a walking dead until God gave me this second chance and let me see that I can still be the man I want to be and the man that he wants me to be.
Mm-hmm.
And to complete the mission that he has for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I believed in him, I surrendered to him, and I began to live my second life.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to make the best of it, and that's what I'm doing.
You know, the other thing that puzzled me, the book consists of 180 pages, and yet it is only two chapters. This book is written in only two chapters. And it is indeed, the format has indeed laid out the story of your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It has like sub-chapters there where it tells you certain events of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I made it easy reading also because I want the teens to read it.
Right.
You know, it's targeted mostly at teens.
Mm-hmm.
And when I speak to these teens, I take a bunch of books with me and I give them to them. I don't charge them for the books.
Mm-hmm.
And they take it home and I autograph it. And
mm-hmm.
they call me back with questions and this and that. And with that, we do follow-ups with drug programs if they want to get
mm-hmm.
into a drug program,
mm-hmm.
if they want to have some kind of counseling, or if they have a secret they want to tell me, or whatever it has to be, you know, they
mm-hmm.
can confide
mm-hmm.
in me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel blessed that God had given me this opportunity to be in this position where I can be trusted by people that was once me, who
mm-hmm.
needed people one time to trust,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it's a good feeling to know that you can help someone, you know. And it's just a great feeling. And, you know, it's no lie that saying that, what, you know, whatever you give you get back tenfold. You know, it is so true. It is so
mm-hmm.
true,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that does not mean money, that does not mean fancy cars, but that means a serenity, a peace of mind,
mm-hmm.
you know, and blessings in many other ways, you know, peace at home. You know, I've been blessed. I've been married for 31 years with the same woman. I have a great wife. You know, God
mm-hmm.
blessed me with that. She was with me to the bad, and she's still
wow.
with me to the good. She still
wow.
calls me king. I still call her queen.
Oh, you
know, so it's
sweet.
You know, it's God has blessed me completely
yes.
in every
yes.
area
yes.
of my life. So the more I give, the more I know I'm going to get back from God. And I don't do it because I'm going to get back from it. I'm enjoying it. I really want to see a smile on a kid's face. I really want to see a kid come up to me and tell me, "Yo, man, the last day I drank or the last day I did drugs was 3 months ago. You know, oh, man, you know, it's a good feeling, you know.
Yes,
and you,
yes.
You go visit them at home, you talk to their parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I can give them a little gift, I give them a little gift, whatever I can do.
Wow,
and that's what it's about. That is what it's about.
Wow.
So my rock, doctor, was my dad.
Yes, I was going to ask you about the relationship with your father. Let's talk about that.
Well, my father was the rock in my life. He was... Mm-hmm. He was a man that was loved by everyone.
Mm-hmm.
The man did not smoke, did not drink, drugs, nothing. You don't even curse. All he did was work, and never complained.
Mm.
He gave us everything. He's the kind of man that he would eat on the table and eat slowly just to see if his kids were going to still be hungry so he can take his food out and then split it up with the rest of them and then say, I'm not hungry. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the things I used to catch on things that my siblings did not caught on. I used to catch, my father's an amazing man.
Mm-hmm.
And then I learned to do the same thing with my children.
Yeah.
So I always wanted to be like my dad.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So when I lost him at 101, I was at his bedside.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he gave me his last blessing.
Mm-hmm.
His last blessing. And I remember him there blessing me.
Yes.
And left me in peace.
Mm-hmm.
So I refused to go to the funeral because I did not want to see the last image of my dad.
Yes, you wrote about
being
that.
Being placed
right.
in a box, six foot under the ground. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, and even though you mentioned now that your father never drank, he never did drugs or anything. However, you wrote in your book that a lot of the strong qualities that your dad has, he passed on to you. So although you fail some of the tests, but there's still a lot of the high qualities that your daddy have that you still possess today.
Yes, and I'm so grateful for them. I'm so grateful for them because I could just watch him all my life and just learn all I needed to learn because he was my everything. He knew how to speak to us. He knew he sacrificed so much for us, you know, and never complained. And that's what a man is about, you know, to provide and protect, and he did all that. He did all that for us.
Wow. My God. Even when he was working in the factory,
he still
made sure he made the provision for his children.
Exactly. So that's why when I was doing these things that were wrong, I felt guilty because I knew that this was against God's will and my dad's will.
Wow.
And I knew that my father would be shamed and that I would hurt him.
Right,
you know,
if he knew you were doing that.
If he knew, and then eventually he did find out, and he was very hurt behind it, but he did everything to help me.
He still stood by you. He still stood by
you. Yeah, he still stood by me, never abandoned me.
Mm-hmm. And even with all those things, and you got the aha moment and was still doing right, other tragedies still hit your family. With your uncle?
Well, when my uncle's death?
Mm-hmm.
When he committed suicide?
Yes.
Well, that was devastating because my uncle had asked me, out of all the family members, he had asked me to come on Wednesday to shave him.
Mm-hmm.
And because he was going to leave the world or something like that, which we thought was mostly like a joke and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I went up to him and I shaved him and made him look real good.
Mm-hmm.
And that same night he shot himself and killed himself. And
my God.
That really devastated me and it really killed my dad. I mean, it really, it hurt my dad so much, you know.
But
I
was
the best
your dad,
of brothers.
And he was his only brother, right?
Well, no, he had other brothers, but he was the only one that was living here
with
him.
Okay.
The others were in Puerto Rico, so
it really devastated
everyone.
Wow. Yeah. What age were you then when your uncle passed?
I was around 25.
Wow.
My
God, that
must
have been devastating for you too as a young
man.
Because he had his own children. He didn't ask any of them to shave him. He asked you, and for you to hear that, and that sent you on a guilt trip.
It did. It did in a way, you know. It gave me a responsibility. I almost felt like I helped him go where he had to go, you know, and the same thing with my dad. My dad had given me, choose me from all the members of the family, his living will. And I was always asking myself, why would he give it to me? So this was something in me that I did not see.
Right. You were a servant. You know, God chose you as a servant. You talk about helping others, and God chose you.
And then later I realized that it was that it was God's will. But you know, I've always wondered why they had always choose me. Why me? Why me? There's so many other uncles and aunts and everybody. Because I didn't want that responsibility. Because my father's living will clearly says not to resuscitate him if he needed to, you know, or any blood transfusion, to just let him die. And I would have to make that decision for him, you know, and thank God it didn't come to that moment that he was able to just die natural death in peace. You know, thank God for that.
Wow. So, you know, you're listening to all the experiences that you have encountered, and you know that you made from good stock. You know, you are good tapestry, because a lot of what you have gone through, there is a possibility that a lot of people in your family could not deal with those things.
Right.
So let's talk about the book some more. You are using it with the children. It's really ministering to them. So what else are you hoping that will happen to this book?
Well, the book, my intention of the book was of course, not to get rich off the book. The intention of the book was to reach out and to let the message out, to relieve myself of this, at the same time helping someone. And I never thought of going on and selling it and whatnot, but they are selling. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think I was going to win any awards, but I did win an award. I won two awards. And then I didn't think it was going
to
be a movie. And sure enough, Stuart Films approached me after they read it. And they said, we're going to make a documentary out of it. And it's in the last stage right now, and it'll be out this year. And Stuart Films, by the way, are the same people, like Tony Cormax, who just made that the hit show that will be on HBO, 12 Steps to Recovery. So that's the director and writer to this. So I see that movie going places. And the movie will reach out more than the book can.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Because a lot of people don't want to spend the time to read.
Exactly. And we'll be putting
different
languages as well, and that's going to be better, very beneficial.
That's going to be powerful. But I'm listening to you, and I'm chuckling because you are talking about all these things that you don't want, and you forget that when you are a servant of the Lord, He provides for you. You don't have to be begging and requesting. He provides for you, and that which you deserve, you get. So just keep visiting His work. You don't have to worry about, you know, you're not
that
doing
is
this
so
and
true.
You're not doing that. It's amazing. Come on,
that
guys.
That is so true.
I want you all to call in. We have 36 minutes remaining. The number to call is 646-915-8166. Now, if you had your life to live over again, what would you have done differently, if anything?
Oh, probably not much. I'm glad what I got out of it. I'm glad of the wisdom that I got out of it, because if I wouldn't have gotten and been through what I've been through, I would not have been able to complete God's mission and save some lives. Mm-hmm. I probably would have been some selfish millionaire or something, you mm-hmm. know. So I'm pretty. I don't think I would change anything. You know, life is what was put there for me.
Mm-hmm.
I knew somehow that something was guiding me. I knew somehow that I had to go through these things.
Mm-hmm.
And then now that I'm out of it, I know why. And I'm doing God's will. And
mm-hmm.
that's, you know, mm-hmm. I don't have really many regrets, you know.
When you sit with your own children now and have conversation, I mean, I know you have sons and you have daughters. What do you say to them about the journey that you've been on?
Well, my son began to, you would think that through what I went through, he would never did, but he fell into the drugs himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I had admitted to him about my stuff, and I never talked to him before, and that's when I began to tell all my children of my past.
Mm-hmm.
But now my son is clean, and now he's doing great,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
it's a path for him.
Mm-hmm.
And soon he'll be going and mentoring with me,
mm-hmm.
With teens. So, mm-hmm. you know, so it all worked out great. You know, my daughters are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're one is a personal trainer.
Mm-hmm.
She does great. The other one works for a secretary. Well, she's a secretary,
mm-hmm.
and she does great. So I have a lot of. I've been blessed with my children. My children
yeah.
have been good. You know, have been good. So they've learned a lot. But I have taught them since they were young about what I knew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've always made them very slick to what's going on. Nice
mm-hmm.
when they were 5, 6 years old. I said, "No, you see this here, that you know, that's no good." Even my wife, I taught her. You
mm-hmm.
know, I married my wife. Let me tell you the story. I married my wife.
Mm-hmm.
We were dating one time. We were in New York. And
dating one time? Hold on
yeah,
a minute.
Well, we only dated a few times, then we got married.
Oh,
we're,
okay.
we're down, she's from Colombia, South America. Okay.
Okay.
And I had taken her to Times Square. So we were, you know, she'd never been to Times Square in New York, so I took her there. So there were these guys, you know, the 3-card Monty that they play, and they trick you with the cards.
Oh,
you pick a card and they take your money. Yeah,
yeah.
3-card Monty. So my wife don't have very good eyesight at that time. Okay, so I told her, see that guy there? That guy is works with that guy, and see that guy over there? He's watching everything they do. He entices people to go and bet money, and they all work together.
Right.
You understand? And you're probably going to see some pickpockets over here. And I said, see that guy there? He's pickpocketing that lady there. She says, where? I don't see it. I says, right there. Don't you see him? And the guy heard. The guy heard what I said. He says, what are you doing, man, in Spanish?
Mm-hmm.
He says, you're a rat. What are you talking about? No. I was just talking to my wife about this. Mm-hmm. Mind. So he comes out, puts his hand in his pocket.
Mm-hmm.
I said, oh, this guy's going to pull out some knife or something.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife went, my girlfriend at that time, went mm-hmm. over and punched the guy right in the chest, said, you keep away from my man. I looked at her, and I said, I'm going to marry this woman.
Oh, my Lord.
I'm going to marry this woman. And sure enough, police came and everything, everybody dispersed,
mm-hmm.
and I fell in love. I fell in love with this woman who stood out for her man.
That's
you know,
right.
She confronted that guy, and I said, wow. So, 31 years and we're still together, and she's still my queen, and I'm still her king.
Wonderful. What a lovely story. What a lovely story. We have 31 minutes remaining, and while I'm still waiting, is there anything you have on your heart you wanted to talk about that I have not asked you?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the book that we didn't discuss, but it'll be crazy to just get into it now because, you know, like the things that I have seen about the racism and
the community. Go ahead and talk about that because, remember, I haven't read all the books. So.
Okay.
We have 30-something minutes. I remember seeing one part where the white people were referring to the Spanish as the other niggers, the niggers that speak,
Spanish.
So
let's talk
about those things. I know we had touched racism a little bit, but we did not delve into it. So,
right.
You know, as a child hearing that, and now you have grown up, you are 60-something-year-old man. Let's talk about that journey.
Well, I had experienced racism myself at the early age of 8,
mm-hmm.
When I was targeted in my shoebox. And I also saw a Latino man being beaten by 4 white officers because he didn't move his car from in front of a church when they asked him to.
Oh,
and I was wondering why they were doing that. And then when people were telling me that it was because the guy was Latino, that's when I started beginning to get a taste of how wicked some particular people can be. Later on in life, when I was about 17 years old, I was still in the streets, but I was very well known. I always was a popular kid no matter what, probably because I was a fast runner or whatever it was. I was popular because I was maybe on drugs. I made the stupid things,
mm-hmm.
but I was there when somebody called me,
mm-hmm.
if they needed me. I've always been.
Mm-hmm.
And I always was one of the guys who used to open up the fire hydrants in New York. So on Fox Street in the Bronx, I had opened the fire hydrant after the police had closed it.
Mm-hmm.
And they got really angry about this because they knew it was me because I knew the trick how to open it with a clothes hanger.
Oh, you are opening it to cool down in the summer?
To cool down in the summertime, exactly.
Okay.
There was no pools out there and stuff like that. We all cool down. We put,
mm-hmm.
you put a can on it, you squirt the water, we all cool out.
Mm-hmm.
So, the cops came again, and they began to close the hydrant. And I went over to get some more water out of it before they closed it. Me and some other guy. And we
mm-hmm.
put a can underneath the squirt, try
mm-hmm.
to get some water out of it. And that's why I got kicked in my chest by this cop.
Wow.
And I was only 17 at that time. And I got kicked in my chest. 4 cops jumped on me. They handcuffed me. They called me all kinds of names. They punched me. Hit me with the nice stick. They did everything they could. They tried to kill me. That's what they tried to do.
Just to get some water. Wow.
They put me in the police car, and they kept beating me in the police car, and they were driving about 20 miles an hour just so they could just keep beating on me. And that famous precinct you heard about, you probably seen the movie Fort Apache.
Mm-hmm.
That's the move. That's the precinct, 41st Precinct, which was notorious.
Wow. Wow.
For racism and you know stuff like that.
Mm.
So I was a target then, and the cops kept coming after me because of that.
Mm.
So I decided to find safety,
mm-hmm.
and after I began to leave that the drugs scene, I got involved with the Young Lords in the Black Panther Party,
mm-hmm.
and they were very active here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago, Memphis, and many places.
Mm-hmm.
And the Young Lords of the Black Panther was about helping the community because the community was not getting anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you had racist police coming in here, framing people, beating up people for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
We had preventive medicine that we could have avoided a certain illness that the hospitals did not want to participate in. And that's what encouraged the Black Panther Party and the Young Lords Party. So what we did,
Let me ask you a question. The Black Panthers, they were a gang as well?
Well, they were in the gang. They were a street gang at one time as well. But they became a political party later. And with some very famous people, Huey P. Newton, Eldridge Cleaver, Bobby Seale. And they were the feared most feared group in America, because when you see a bunch of blacks with guns roaming the streets, you know, white people say, "Hey, what's going on with this?"
Mm-hmm.
But they were in their right. So what they had done was take over a church in Chicago, and they created the free food program, and they began to give free food and clothing to the kids in the neighborhood, and telling the people that the government's not giving it to you, we have to give it to you.
Wow.
And, you know, and they're opening their eyes to the things that was happening, the racism, the genocide, and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the Young Lords Party was the Puerto Rican workers' organization that formed with the blessing of the Black Panther Party.
both the young lords joined forces with the Black Panther.
Oh yeah, they were always together. Yes.
So we were talking about what year? What year was this we're talking about?
This was the 60s or 60. Oh, 64, 65, mm-hmm. all the way up to the 70s.
Yes,
and
yes.
And what happened was the CIA, the FBI, slowly started locking people up, mm-hmm. framing them, and killing them, assassinating them. Mm-hmm. And as you know, Tupac, his mother, Athena Shakur, was a member of the Black Panther Party, which
yeah,
who I knew.
I didn't know that, but I know two of my colleagues now are children of Black Panthers.
Yeah,
well, I know they talk about that in their stories and everything like that, but we never get into the conversation about what the Black Panthers were.
She was a very powerful sister, very strong voice, and who mm-hmm. helped a lot of women of color.
Wow.
She was very powerful in speech. And to think that she would be Tupac's mother later in the future that I met while she was pregnant. So I actually met Tupac in her stomach.
Wow.
And I met her at a community college where she spoke in New York, and I spoke to her briefly. And
so
in her stomach she had...
The Black Panthers had women as members.
Yes,
but
men and women.
The gangs, because now we're going back and forth. Gang,
so this is not a gang.
I know, but I'm talking about the something lords. What you said, the young lads. They were not a gang.
No, they were first a gang. They were first a street gang in Spanish Harlem. Yes,
right.
And they formed into a political party. So from the Young Lords became the Young Lords Party, a political organization. And we had a 13-point program, just like the Black Panther Party. And the program consisted of, we want self-determination for people of color in the United States and in Puerto Rico. We wanted Puerto Rico to be independent from the United States. We want the genocide and all this stuff to stop in our communities, the police brutality and stuff like that. So those were mostly our demands. So what we did, we patrolled the neighborhoods a lot. And prevented cops from injuring people for no reason.
So both the Black Panther and the Young Lords collaborated on the efforts of protecting the community. There was no rivalry between the two.
Not at all.
One was black and one was Latino. That was not.
No. No. Well, you know, in New York, at that one time, you know, wherever you went, if you saw a black neighborhood, you saw a Puerto Rican neighborhood right next to it. Mm-hmm. If you saw a Puerto Rican neighborhood, you saw a black neighborhood next to it. That's the way it always been. Mm-hmm. Every neighborhood that I've lived in was black and Puerto Ricans.
Mm-hmm. So
you know, Spanish Harlem and in South Bronx, everywhere I moved. So we always were living in the same slum conditions. So we all were affected from the same racism and stuff like that.
I want to go back to the statement that was mentioned by other ethnic groups that were not Latino and black that referred to Latino as the other niggers that speak Spanish. Now, at the time when that description was made, how did the Latino and the black communities react to this? Did they just remain quiet about it, or what was their reaction?
No, but everyone knew this. Everyone seemed to know this. If you're a person of color, you see, the thing that confuses a lot of people a lot is this word Hispanic. And I like to make that very, very clear. I do not like to be called Hispanic because I am not Hispanic. I am Latino. I am a man of color. I have a brown skin. There is a difference between me and a person who was born in Argentina or in Spain who is also called Hispanic. He's European. He's white. He's Caucasian. Mm-hmm. So when they say Hispanics, they mention the whole thing. And this is where there's the distinction between us Latinos and Hispanics. Mm-hmm. So people of color like myself, Dominicanos, we consider ourselves people of color.
Mm-hmm.
So in that identification, we have been able to identify with our black brothers and live in the same communities. Mm-hmm. If you go to New York, Back anywhere you go, you're going to see that same thing you have been seeing for years. Blacks and Latinos are always in the same slum conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Black Panther Party, young little parties knew this, and they knew that together they would be a force to reckon with. And they were.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They were.
Mm-hmm.
We were very, very feared, and that's why the government had to do everything possible to destroy them. And they did successfully with CIA infiltrators, assassinations, and everything else like that.
You know, I listened to the conversation, and to be honest, I've never thought of it before, but I listened to you speak now, and I think when other ethnic groups were describing it, they weren't using the derogatory term nigger to mean an ethnic group or the color of your skin. To me,
mm-hmm.
it sounded as if it was more the economic conditions that both group lived in.
Or how they felt about us.
Right,
more like
right.
We were the, yes, yes.
The only difference is that they speak Spanish. But it's
Felipe
the same low-class life that they're living.
Felipe Luciano was one of the original last poets, and he was also the Minister of Information of the Young Lords Party.
Who is that?
He came out, Felipe Luciano.
Mm-hmm.
He had a poem called Jibaro, My Pretty Nigger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that is one that you should Google that and listen to that song, and listen to that poem.
What,
and
is, what is it called?
Jibaro. Jibaro.
Please spell it.
J-I-B-A-R-O.
R-O. And what's
my
this?
Pretty,
my pretty Jibaro. Lady.
My pretty nigga.
My pretty.
And that's a poem that he had wrote during the last poem. And he can describe, you can go on YouTube and you can see how he describes the connection between our Puerto Ricans and people of color with Africa. My last name is from is Vidal. It's French from the
mm-hmm.
from the Ivory Coast. Because
mm-hmm.
my great grandfather was a slave to the white
mm-hmm.
man, and that's
mm-hmm.
how I got that name Vidal when the French
mm-hmm.
colonized them. So there's some history, and most
remember?
Puerto Ricans have African and Taino blood on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we our music, our food is African,
mm-hmm.
is African, and our culture
wow.
is African. Even with our songs, we sing to Africa, and we
mm-hmm.
sing to El Negrito, and that's
mm-hmm.
the way, you know, because
mm-hmm.
we keep that alive because
mm-hmm.
they are trying to take that from us by making Puerto Rican an independent, by making Puerto Rican a state.
Wow.
Of the United States, and they would take
wow.
all our culture from us, and
mm-hmm.
that's one of the things we didn't want.
Right. Well, I tell you, I hope you had a good a time as I did. We are down to 17 minutes, and I want to give you some time to just summarize your conversation. I know we talk a lot. We went back and forth into different areas of your journey.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to take this time and to summarize your thoughts that you want to leave the listeners with, and then
mm-hmm.
tell them how to find the book, where to get in touch with you, and everything like that. So just take your time. We are down to 16 minutes.
Okay. Well, one thing I've learned in life was that if you keep your eyes on the prize, you will get that prize.
Mm-hmm.
And never lose hope. I've lost hope, but there was always a little spark inside that said, go take that next step.
Mm-hmm.
Take that next step. A lot of people give up too easy in life.
Mm-hmm.
And they start calling themselves failures.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, they do not succeed in what they want to succeed in.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of kids today, a lot of teens today, are killing themselves. The third largest killer of kids today, from 14 to 24, is suicide.
Mm.
There's something wrong with this society. There's something wrong with what we're teaching our kids and what we're feeding them.
Mm-hmm.
If we take the time to spread love instead of hate, if you spend the time of looking at someone who is different in culture, nationality, religion, and try to find out a little more about their nationality, their religion, their customs, you will get to learn a lot of things about them instead of hating. But today we live in a society where we choose to hate first. You know, God gave us a lot of things. God gave us the power to reason, to use logic. He also gave us the power to choose.
Mm-hmm.
We can choose our own destiny.
Mm-hmm.
Today, people won't go on emotions and on feelings. Like the homosexuality today. You have kids as young as 7 years old. Mm-hmm. Saying that they're homosexuals. What does a kid that's 7 years old know about homosexuality?
Mm-hmm.
But society pushes that among to them.
Mm-hmm.
So where are we going on with this? We're going because we base everything on feelings and what feels good and not what is righteous
mm-hmm.
and what is right. If we were to follow God's word and the simple instructions that he's given us to do unto others what you want done unto you,
mm-hmm.
it is so rewarding spiritually, and it will bring peace among everyone. But everyone, today it's a doggy dog, and I got to get mine.
Mm.
You know, Facebook, social networks, and all this stuff has pushed us so far away, Doctor.
Mm.
It's called social network. But yet there is no social there because no one is being themselves.
Mm.
Everyone's pretending to be everyone else but themselves.
Mm.
And we don't want to have conversations. We don't want to meet you. Just send me an email.
Mm.
We are getting back into our own shells instead of sharing.
Mm-hmm.
As a human race, sharing, we are locking ourselves in individual little cocoons.
Mm.
So we have to go out there, break that shell out, and reach to that person, that child, that if you do not reach, it can be your own child.
Mm-hmm.
That if you do not come over and talk to him and say some good words, he may be the next junkie.
Mm.
He may be the next serial killer. Spend the time. Words are very powerful. God made this world. God made this planet by using words. He didn't have no tools. He just said, let there be light, and there was light. Our words are very powerful. What we tell our kids are very powerful. Teach them love, and there will be love. If you teach them hate, there will be hate. When I talk to these kids, Doctor, I talk to them like they're my brothers and my sisters,
mm-hmm.
my little brothers and sisters. I love them all. I know them all by name. They come to me. I go to them. I meet their parents. And I love it. And each time I see a smile on their face, or that the mother tells me, hey, he completed this program, or he went back to school, or he's no longer in this gang, it thrills me. I did my part. If all men in the community could rise up and just do that a little bit, we can do amazing things. Now, there is an old saying that say it takes a village to raise a child.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is the village has been destroyed.
Yes.
We have to rebuild that village,
mm-hmm.
that confidence in that community that we don't longer have. You could be able to walk down the street, and your neighbor would take you by the ear and take you to your mother.
That's right.
And spank you, and your mom mm-hmm. would say nothing.
Today,
they don't see none of that stuff anymore.
Yes.
So we need to rebuild this village.
Mm-hmm.
We need to rebuild the purpose of life, which is love, sharing, and understanding. For all people. There is no race, there is no person better than none, than ever.
Mm.
There is none. I am no better than no one, and no one's better than me. I choose the way I want to live, and I have chosen to dedicate the rest of my life to helping these young men and women so they can save themselves the pain that I went through. Because we just touch on the pain that I went through. There was a lot
mm-hmm.
more pain that was
mm-hmm.
involved.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
there is a lot of pain out there. I don't want it for myself. I won't wish it on anybody, and
mm-hmm.
I surely don't want no young man or woman to go through it.
Mm-hmm.
So give a little by sharing a little.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
share a little love. Keep your eyes on the prize. You will get what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is so bad. Nothing is so bad that you have to take your life. Nothing.
Mm.
Nothing.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Would you give your information, give your website and everything like that, how people can reach you? If they want
yes.
you to speak to the group, how they can find your book. Take time to give them that information, please.
Okay. Yes, the website is You Only Live Twice, by GV, BYGV, my initials, .com.
Mm-hmm.
So You Only Live Twice, BYGV.com. And then you can post.
www.youonlylivetwice.
You only live twice.
You only live twice.
By BY.
By GV.
GV.
Dot com.
Dot com. And there you have the information how to contact me, how to get the book. If you want me to speak at a kid's a program
mm-hmm.
or whatever,
mm-hmm.
I don't charge. I do it for love and for the rewards that I get from God, who
mm-hmm.
continues to keep me alive and continues to bless me and my family and my friends and all my loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it's about. The book is also in e-form at Lulu. And a few other places, Barnes and Black and Noble.
Mm-hmm. Could you go ahead and add that to the chat room if you're still on? Add the places that they can get the book in the chat room. Are you still there? Oh, I think, all right, he got dropped off the line accidentally, so he probably will call back. I want to thank guests. 5310 4778 5460 and Fish 9 Bank. I want to thank you guys for listening to the show for the duration. Fish 9 Bank and Mark, I think you came a little late, so you can catch it on the archive and just encourage others to listen. I want you all to mark the show favorite. Stop by the show page, please, and write a comment for me. Write a remark about what your thoughts are about the show. You know, everybody likes a little encouragement. So just stop by the show page, write a word or two there. And I look forward. We are on Wednesdays between 10 a.m. and 12 noon. We are on to every Sunday night between 7 p.m. and 8:30. Tonight we went a little longer. We went for 2 hours, and I just pray that it was worth your while. I want to remind you all that I am starting this breakfast feeding program at my old school in Jamaica, West Indies. So check out the event on Facebook. Check me out, Daphne Clark Hudson on Facebook. Like my page and support my breakfast feeding program. The kids are going to school hungry, and you and I know how important it is for breakfast, especially for young children to have breakfast. So I'm depending on you for your support. I'm looking for different volunteers. So if you're interested in getting more information, please inbox me or send me a message. Let me know what you can do. Every little bit counts. Whether you can give a dollar, 25 cents, 50 cents, or more. We have a page set up on Facebook that you can donate through PayPal. There is no set amount. You can do what your heart feels right. So again, that's for the breakfast feeding program at the Carmel Moravian School in Westmoreland. That's my old school. And we are looking to put some food in the stomach of those children. I want to thank you again for your support. I want to thank Mr. Vido for coming on the show and sharing his story. I just pray
that his story will open doors for many young people to get help with the plague of drugs or alcohol, and even some grown people too who is being plagued with that demon of alcohol or drugs. I pray for his healing. I pray for his continued success in the work that he is doing with young people. We know the doctor say he's terminally ill, but as he has said that he got a second opinion from God and he told him otherwise. So we are praying that the Lord will send his angels of healing to touch him all over his body and give him a complete healing so that he can continue to do this work that he is called to do. Again, I want to honor each and every one of you, guest 8129. Thank you for joining the show. Please click on the archive and share it with everybody else. This is Dynamic Daphne saying, remember, you do not have to live for mediocrity because you were created for greatness. Stay blessed and follow your destiny.
What's the plight that you've called me to? The thing I'm set aside to do. I trust you, Lord, to see me through. Will you let me look in your heart?
Hello, my honored guest just called back in. We know technology has a mind. Yeah.
My computer and phone went out at the same time, you know.
Yes,
you know, I believe
yes.
that there is a good force, but there's also evil forces.
Yeah, but
things.
Thank God it was good to us. We got to the great portion of that. So I want to thank
good.
You for coming on and for blessing my
thank
listeners
you.
And, you know, to really sow into them. And I pray for your continued success and complete healing so you can continue to do the work that you're called to do.
Thank you, sister. You go on. You keep doing what you're doing because you are
thank
doing a fantastic
you.
Job.
Thank
your
you.
Your spirit
thank
is very, very strong.
Thank you very much. And I'll speak to you soon.
God bless you.
God
Bye-bye.
Bless you. God bless you. Thank you so much. Yes, and for all the guests in the room, thank you guys for staying the duration of the show. And I'll see you next time.